It is time for your KDK local newscast for this Thursday morning, December 29th. I'm Steve Cole, live from the heart of Carbondale's Creative District. Democrat Cristanta Duran will serve as the top lawmaker in the State House of Representatives next session, leading the 65-member chamber as Speaker of the House. She will be the first Latina to serve in that role in state history. Vanda Berkeland spoke to her about the upcoming session.
You are the first Latina speaker. How does that play into your perspective and how you approach things?
It is a great honor to have been elected by my colleagues to serve as the next Speaker of the House. And in going forward in this upcoming legislative session, we are going to be focused on making sure that we always put people first. We want the Colorado House Democrats to stand for not taking any Coloradans for granted and not leaving any Coloradans behind. And so I'm hopeful that the upcoming legislative session will be one that's productive.
Do you feel that that's something your party needs to work on coming out of this presidential race, where a lot of people who voted for Trump said they did feel left behind?
Well, Colorado House Democrats actually had great advancements this last election. We went from 34 seats to 37 seats. And I think that's representative of the fact that we have leaders from all areas of Colorado that listen to their constituents and deliver results to the issues that people deal with every day.
We're not going into a big election year this session. So do you think of something substantive and some big policy solution both sides can agree on is going to happen, it'll happen this session?
Well, the budget is in a very challenging position, and we need to make sure that we're adequately investing in education and also transportation. With so much growth to the state and economic activity that we've seen here, we need to ensure that we invest in our roads and bridges and infrastructure, and that we think about how we organize our roads, not just to move cars, but also people. And that's why prior to the election, I convened a group of legislators in leadership to start talking about transportation funding specifically. I'm hopeful that we will be able to come up with a statewide transportation plan this session.
Is that something you think will be part of the budget? Or could we possibly refer something to voters for instance, raising the gas tax?
We're putting all options on the table because we have to look at a variety of ways to address our budget issues. The last two sessions, Democrats came forward with changing the hospital provider fee into an enterprise, which would have freed up hundreds of millions of dollars under the Tabor cap to invest in education and transportation. That's something that we're still interested in, but we also have to recognize that that would have been a band-aid to a larger budget issue. And that's why we've convened this group of Republicans and Democrats to figure out what can we do long-term in the state of Colorado to address our transportation needs. I feel very strongly, and felt this before the election, that regardless of who won or lost on election day, to be able to do this effectively, we have to have everyone at the table and have Republicans and Democrats working together. We're continuing those conversations, and we're looking at a variety of different options.
You served on the Joint Budget Committee. What do you see as the biggest budget challenge lawmakers will have to grapple with this session?
One area in particular that I think we have to continue some of the good work that we've done before is making sure that the people of Colorado have tools to succeed, get good paying jobs. We should be thinking always about how we invest in local workers and local businesses. And specifically, right now there are jobs in Colorado in the technology industry that are not being fulfilled, and particularly areas like computer science and digital literacy. Only 1 in 4 Colorado students have access to computer science or digital literacy classes. We need to do more to make sure that those options are available for students. As we have a changing economy, we need to make sure everyone has tools to succeed, to be able to provide for themselves and for their families.
It's hard to predict with a Trump presidency, but how much do you think you, as the Democratic leader in the State House, will have to respond to what's happening nationally?
Well, we're going to focus on being as productive as possible in Colorado. I do think we have a tradition of Republicans and Democrats coming together. That said, I will stand strong against any actions that can hurt Colorado families. And we need to make sure that we focus on always putting people first.
Thanks. We appreciate you taking the time. That's incoming Speaker of the House, Cristanta Duran. I'm Benta Berkeland in Denver.
Republican Patrick Neville is only serving his second term in office, but he recently rose to the highest position in his caucus, House Minority Leader. Neville's selection comes as a surprise. Polly Lawrence, who has served in the legislature since 2012, was considered the favorite for the position. Benta Berkeland got Neville's thoughts on the upcoming session and his new role.
You've served in the State House for one session. and you weren't the heir apparent for this position. I think we thought it would be someone who was in leadership. Talk about your sales pitch to your caucus and why you wanted to take on this role.
We really need to highlight who we are. I think we need to be bold as Republicans and show the people who we really are. And that's really to be champions of the people. Our goal is to empower the people. Right now, I think we're in a state where the government has really gotten too large, and it's gotten into every aspect of people's lives. And we really want to pull that back so that people are making more decisions for themselves. I would rather see more decisions made at the kitchen tables of families rather than under the gold dome here at the Capitol.
You'd be happy if fewer bills were passed each session.
One way to judge a session is a lot of people will judge it, look how many bills are passed. I think we should look at the quality of the different bills. Simply passing a bill, even if it has great intentions, doesn't necessarily mean that it's a great bill. There might be unintended consequences resulting from that. So we need to take a look at it. And really, I think everything we should be doing is trying to empower the citizens of the state to make decisions for themselves, for their own businesses, so they can grow and prosper.
Do the results of the presidential election and a divided country change or influence how you'll approach this upcoming session?
Not too much. I do think we need to look at what changes are going to be made at the federal level. And according to what changes are made at the federal level, if we have a good opportunity to maybe make some adjustments, like in the healthcare arena, we need to be ready and be on our toes so that we're not stuck and locked into these high prices and this current situation that we have.
Your party lost seats in the House, even though nationally it's very good for Republicans. Is that part of what you were talking about with messaging to voters?
I don't know if we need to do anything exactly differently. I did take this role with the idea that we were going to be bold and that we were going to show who we are. We can't just simply say over and over that we're not the other side of the aisle. We have to show what we stand for and show how we are actually going to be better for the citizens of Colorado.
For policy issues, what do you think are going to be your caucus's priorities?
Well, I think we do have to take a look at housing. The fact of the matter is, in the housing market in Colorado, we've seen owner-occupied multifamily housing go down from less than 5% of the market, and that's the current situation. So we do need to take a look at that, and so we can actually start getting some of these projects built again and get the government out of the way in a lot of those areas. And litigation reform, I think we have to take a look at it so these housing projects actually start getting built again, so these people actually have, the consumers have a product to consume. Another thing, like I said earlier, is the regulatory reform. The average small business owner doesn't realize that these rules are being passed or they're being placed on them until afterwards. So we have to find a system that actually takes a look at the cost-benefit analysis of these rules before they're passed. Transportation funding, I think we need to take a deep look at that, because we keep saying under the Gold Dome that this is a top priority, yet it's not a priority in the general fund. Our one discretionary pot, we have not made it a priority. And it's my goal that we show the citizens that it is a priority, and we start looking at all the projects in the general fund. And if transportation is our number one top priority, let's show the citizens it is, and let's actually fund some of it through the general fund.
For you, are you feeling pretty optimistic about the future of Colorado and how the path the state's on?
I am. I'm very optimistic. Colorado's been a traditionally libertarian-leaning state, and that's actually philosophically, that's how I lean. I'm very look at it, I think, with limited government type of focus, and I think that's how most Colorado citizens actually are. And so I think if we can actually move forward on that message and reduce some of the size and scope and burdens on the citizens of Colorado, Coloradans will flourish.
How much of your role is looking to the next election cycle and gaining seats? And if that happened, you guys could have the majority in both chambers.
Well, I think right now we got to look at governing. So I think if we actually show that we are the message that resonates with the Coloradans, that might have an effect in the next election cycle and actually be in a position where we can influence and make Coloradans' lives better.
We're out of time. Thanks.
Thank you.
That was House Minority Leader Patrick Neville. I'm Benta Berkland in Denver.
Finding a place to live that's affordable has been getting a lot harder in Colorado over the past few years, especially for the state's transgender population. Eric Galatis reports.
It's been 8 years since transgender people were added to Colorado's anti-discrimination laws, but many in Denver's transgender community say they're still experiencing housing and other forms of discrimination. Sable Schultz with the GLBT Community Center of Colorado says it's common for trans folks to be told after they arrive for their appointment that an apartment has already been rented.
Perhaps that is indeed the case, but it's also just as possible that the landlord decided that they didn't want to rent to a transgender person. A lot of the marginalization that we experience in terms of job and housing discrimination is very subtle.
Nearly one in four transgender people in the U.S. experienced housing discrimination in the past year, according to the National Center for Transgender Equality, and a statewide survey by One Colorado found transgender people also struggle with threats of violence, limited employment options, and poverty. Karen Scarpella with the Gender Identity Center of Colorado says not being able to land a job that pays a living wage can lead to substandard housing and poorer health outcomes.
Well, if you're living in an unsafe neighborhood, you're nervous, upset, uncomfortable, you don't feel safe, and you don't rest well. So your anxiety level is automatically never going down. That affects your health.
LGBT advocates say many Coloradans don't know that discrimination is against the law and are encouraging people to take legal action. Scarpella says ultimately, discrimination is rooted in fear and ignorance.
And so while I think that passing laws and anti-discrimination bills are important, I really believe that none of that's truly going to change until people meet somebody who's transgender and understand that they're just regular people with something that's a little different about them.
The Federal Fair Housing Act prohibits discrimination based on race, color, national origin, religion, sex, disability, and family status. Adding gender identity and sexual orientation protections would require Congress to amend the law. This story was originally reported by Chandra Thomas Whitfield for the Colorado Trust. Find out more at coloradotrust.org. For KDNK, I'm Eric Galatis.
In one of her final acts as 9th Judicial District Attorney, Sherry Kaloya has announced that the long-awaited Sexual Assault Nurse Examiner Program, or SANE, is now open and ready to provide exams for victims of sexual assault. Garfield County, Pitkin County, and Rio Blanco County are all able to utilize examinations from 3 qualified nurses at the Garco Health Office in Rifle. This will make getting exams much more convenient for victims and for law enforcement in the district. Victims are never charged for the service. The public comment period on the Bureau of Land Management's plan to protect the Gunnison sage grouse has been extended until January 19th. The Gunnison sage grouse is listed as a threatened species by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. About 4,000 live in the Gunnison Basin, and another 1,000 are scattered across western Colorado and eastern Utah. The BLM manages much of the bird's habitat and wants to amend its resource management plans. Conservation groups have criticized the proposal as doing too little to protect the bird. More information at BLM.gov with a search for Gunnison sage grouse.